Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Ninth State Sports Show Lacrosse Edition. My name is Joe Marcellina, and joining me once again, Derryfield AD and boys lacrosse coach Chris Hetler. Chris, how are you doing today?
Joe, I'm doing great. Ready to roll here. We're in the middle of another good week. We've actually had a good stretch of weather here. It's been nice.
Don't talk about it, right?
I know. Things are good. We're in the middle of the season. We're probably about a quarter of the way through.
No, I mean, I think we were closer to half. I think I was thinking about that on the way over
here. Well,
based
on the number of games that teams have played.
Number of games, we are a quarter of the way through. But on the calendar, week from now, when we record the podcast, we're about halfway.
It'll be June before you know it, and we'll be having you ranting about, you can't be at three locations at one time.
You know what? I'm glad you brought that up because I forgot it last week. So we'll get into that later. Of course, you can always share feedback or thoughts on the show by sending an email to nhhighschoolsports@gmail.com or connect with us on social media. You can follow the site on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube at NHHSports. New boys lacrosse shows are posted every Thursday morning at nh-highschoolsports.com or by searching the Ninth State Sports Show on Spotify or Odyssey. Cool little note I want to throw in here, too. The other day, when I forget where I was, but I was talking to a coach, and I overheard kids talking off to the side, and one of the kids was like, "Hey, it's the podcast guy."
One of them said,
"Oh, you mean the ones on Spotify?" So I thank you for letting us know that people are listening to things in those places. So that's always good to know. One other place that you can listen to us now is also on the radio. The folks over at Manchester Public Television have started airing the show on their radio station, WMNH 95.3. You can listen to the show Fridays at 5 p.m., Saturdays at 8 a.m., and Sundays at noon. You asked me last week if I had listened, and I hope I didn't come off as saying, no, I wouldn't listen to the show. I was saying I don't like the sound of my voice, so that's why I don't re-listen to the show unless I have to edit it. That's what I was getting at.
Joe, can they find you on social media, too? Do you do any of the InstaFace or the tweet talking or any of that stuff?
No TikTok. I tried to start TikTok a while back, and I just couldn't figure out what to put on there. So it might still exist, and I think there's maybe two or three videos on there.
I think maybe after games, that's part of your interview from now on. You have the kids teach you a dance after the game. We do.
I thought you were going to say I should do live interviews on which I did try at one point when. Do you remember that thing Twitter had called Periscope?
Yeah.
I was doing that for a little while. I think I did a couple halftime interviews.
Instagram Live, Reels, we'll get you going.
All right. Well,
for the future.
We'll plan on that. Maybe that's next season. All right. Before we get started, I got to tell you about our sponsor. The Ninth State Sports Show is proudly sponsored by Prolax Customs. Since 2018, Prolax Custom Lacrosse of Bedford has been the region's go-to source for boys stick stringing and custom lacrosse head dyes. Don't settle for a hand-me-down stick or mass-produced factory pocket when you can get a stick dialed in for your position and playing style from Prolax Customs. Whether it's a brand new stick, a restring of your existing stick, or a full custom dye job to stand out from the crowd, every customer they work with gets one-on-one service and satisfaction guarantee. With access to every major brand, Prolax Customs is your hometown source for your next stick. Visit them on Instagram or at ProlaxCustoms.com. All right. We'll start where we always start in the season, and that's the coaches' poll. Vacation week is usually kind of a tough one to get votes in for, because I feel like a lot of coaches, not to say they're going on vacation, not saying that, but I know a lot of you guys
routine's
use your,
thrown off.
Well, you got a lot of you guys use your school emails, too.
Yep.
And if you're not in school, you may not check the school email. I will, but not this week. This week we got all 18 voters sending in a poll this week, so we are fully locked and loaded on the poll. Once again, it's a poll where BG is the top team, but they lost some votes again this week. First place votes. Last week we talked about how it was the first week in a couple of years that they weren't the unanimous number one. They lost one vote. This week, three votes. Exeter picked up three first-place votes this week.
And that was before yesterday's game?
And that was before the game against Bedford yesterday, on Tuesday. Yes, once again, BG number one, 15 of the 18 first-place. Exeter at two with three. Bedford moves out of that tie for third. They take third on their own. Derryfield at four. Portsmouth and Pinkerton flipped. Portsmouth going to 5, Pinkerton to 6. Timberlane closed the gap a lot coming in at 7. There was a stretch there through like the first 7 or 8 polls that came in that Timberlane was actually ahead of Pinkerton, and Pinkerton came, you know, got higher votes in the later polls that came in. This is kind of like, I feel like I should have a map and do we're doing like the
just getting us ready for political season, yeah, exactly. Next November. All right.
St. Thomas stayed at number 8, Londonderry stayed at 9, and Merrimack, again, kind of like Pinkerton moving up at the end. A couple late polls coming in bumped Merrimack past Wyndham into the 10 spot. Wyndham, the first team out in the also receiving votes category.
And a few other teams in the also receiving votes
category. Oh, plenty, a lot of them. Winneconnet, Campbell, Oyster River, Newmarket, Bow, Hopkinton. So a couple D3s,
I
mean, three teams getting in there.
For all those teams, I mean, I think the top three right now seem pretty clear cut, and then I think there's some room underneath there for argument. But I mean, hey, you know, we'll get into it in a little bit. But I mean, based on the results yesterday, if Exeter's getting those first place votes now, and then yesterday, I mean,
well, we'll find out by the time we do this next week. We will know a whole lot more. Well, we're used to top three. Really, there's a top 9. If you look at the way the numbers stack up. You know, granted, there's a big distance between the points that Londonderry has and the points that BG has, but I mean, that's because as you go 1 through 9, it you know, you decrease. But everybody had, it's for the most part, the same
right now.
Everybody had the same 9 teams, I want to say, in the poll, just in a different order. So before we get too far into it, I do want to mention too to people, I know there's a lot of big games going on Wednesday this week. Two that kind of stand out in my mind, obviously the Portsmouth Exeter boys game Wednesday afternoon, and then you've got Bedford at Dover, which is you know, has a significant meaning because Dover goalie Dom Chalifour's 10 saves away from the state record. So two games that are happening on Wednesday that unfortunately we're recording this beforehand. Sorry if anyone thought we were live there, that just got thrown out the window. But we're doing this before those games take place. So, unfortunately,
we'll talk about it. We'll have a lot to talk about next week. I mean, you know, those games will have, especially the Exeter Portsmouth game will have serious implications on the polls.
That and
help
and
to kind of sort some things out, kind of see where teams are at. You know, definitely want to, you know, if Dom is able to reach that record today or, you know, on Wednesday or in his next game, we definitely want to celebrate that. You know, and I think for people out there that don't know where some of these are coming from, check out Lax Numbers. Lax Numbers is a poll. It used to be Joe. Do you remember Lax Power?
I do. I miss Lax Power.
So Lax Numbers was developed from some of the guys who actually used to run Lax Power. Lax Numbers was it was developed by the guys who ran Lax Power. It wasn't the original creator, but some of the guys, you know, a lot of people had missed it and were calling for it to come back. And it's a basically a version 2.0. I think they're doing a nice job with it. The first rankings for New Hampshire just came out. They gave it a few weeks, kind of like, you know, maybe they do in college football now, right? To kind of sort of see how, you know, teams before they just used to do it kind of based off of last year. And now they're kind of waiting to see how teams, you know, their first 4 or 5 games play out. Similar poll to the coaches poll, I would say there was definitely some movement. Well, there were a few teams ranked a little bit lower than I think coaches, you know, eyes and boots on the ground here might agree with, but fairly similar poll.
Interesting at the, I think this has definitely changed since I looked yesterday. So that means they've updated it, which is great. Obviously with the BG Bedford game from last night.
Now that it's gone live, that'll happen on a daily basis. You can check in and see how the games affect it.
Bedford's moved up to 3. I don't think they were 3 before. Cole Brown is at 8 after that win over Campbell yesterday, and Campbell's at 9. So those two teams are not in the top 10 in the coaches poll. So that's the big difference that that you see right away. And Wyndham's in there too. No, Merrimack is not. Neither is Pinkerton. Pinkerton's at 12. On Lax Numbers.
I think once their strength of schedule starts really playing out, you're going to see them quickly. As long as they win, they'll quickly rise up the rankings there. You know, I think that's just a matter of right now. You know, when you lose games, it does really affect the algorithm there. And so, you know, I don't think we expect Pinkerton to stay there too long in those rankings. But the other reason I wanted to bring up Lax Numbers though is because of the ability the guy who partnered with that. Mike Lovejoy, he used to do, now I'm blanking on,
Lax Records. Records, yeah.
He has partnered with them and basically is, you know, has an incredible database of coach submissions for wins, losses, team records, individual points, assists, goals, all those things. And that's where we're getting Dom's record from, is from coaches' submissions there. Just kind of encouraging coaches out there that are listening to get in touch with Lax Numbers. And if you have, you know, old database records, if you have, you know, if it's been handed down through your athletic department or you've been a coach there for a long time, submit those things, because it's only going to make our, you know, as a state association, we really don't have those records per se anywhere. And we really kind of rely on coaches to pass those things along when they do happen. And I think it's pretty neat that, that they're able to, that he's been keeping it for as long as they have. There's quite a few New Hampshire coaches, if you look at the all-time list on there, that are pretty high up in the rankings there. So it's pretty neat.
Yeah. There are definitely other states that, do a, I hate to say, better job making records available. I was texting you the other night. I used to work, my first job was down in Kentucky, and the KHSAA has a lot of specifically for basketball and football, but a lot of records on, you know, I was going through texting you some of the records I was finding, you know, guys like, you know, Sean Alexander and Tim Couch holding records in right. Kentucky high school football.
I haven't noticed it here for like basketball and stuff. Like, we luckily, you know, we do have some outside, you know, agencies that are compiling those things. But even just looking up, you know, 1,000-point scores in New Hampshire history, right? We had one at Derryfield this winter, and it was difficult to go back and find, you know, all-time points and scoring, things like that. So again, easy source. They make it super easy to submit stats and records and things like that. So definitely go check it out if you haven't seen it yet.
The one thing I wish that we still had, Lax Power also had results going back like 20 years.
Yeah, unfortunately, this one only goes to 2019. Yeah.
And if you look, you know, the schools now use websites that go back, but only to 2016, I believe. And then Max Preps, it's hit or miss. Like the entire 2015 season, like no one has any.
Well,
records on
all that. The more reason. Maybe we get enough coaches and other people clamoring for it, and they'll. I'm sure it, if it was on the internet at one point, it's still there somewhere. So it probably, maybe in the future, it's something they can build in. They just got it up and running a couple of years ago again, so it's probably, you know, they're building things out, and so maybe we can get them to get that included on there, because that it is cool. Let's go back and look at how programs have evolved over time.
Well, I guess a good segue to our next conversation. One of the things that came up watching that Bedford-Bishop-Girton game Tuesday night was, wow, when was the last time BG had an in-state game that was this close? Wow, when was the last time they lost to an in-state
other
team?
Other than Pinkerton.
Other than, that's the, Pinkerton's the answer, the 2019 right. championship game. That's an easy one to figure out. In-state, other than Pinkerton, I think I have it on my site somewhere, but I got to go back.
I know
probably
what it
8
is.
Years.
I know what it is.
I'm
had this
pretty sure it was
last.
it's Hanover in the 2012. Was it 2012 or 2012 regular season then?
I believe 2012 regular season. Yes.
Okay. I thought it might have been the championship game in 2009. But.
I got quizzed on this last night on a coach's text thread I'm on, and I was debating that. I'm writing down. I know they lost to Hanover in 07 and 09. And then it was more recent than that. They said, well, it's in 2012. And I thought, well, what programs? And I just basically, like, that was about the time when Hanover still had it going on. And, you know, yeah, it's been that long.
Which is just crazy. And honestly, you know, it looked like some of that talk was premature last night. I mean, Bedford had a 3-2 lead in the first quarter of the game. And they looked like they had a lot of momentum, a lot of energy.
Had some chances early,
had
too.
Had some other chances early to go up even more and couldn't capitalize. And then BG had a BG run to end the first quarter, 4 goals in 2.5 minutes. It carried over into the second quarter, 2 more goals. All of a sudden, it's 8-3. They've scored, 6 goals in just over – almost 6 minutes, just a little under 6 minutes. You know, it looked like, and Coach Cameron said this afterwards, he's like, I thought we were on our way to 20, you know, the way it was going. I mean, they're up 8-3 with almost 10 minutes left in the right. second quarter. And then it stopped. You know, Bedford started making plays. You know, first it was just, you know, getting the ball back, taking a timeout. They scored out of a timeout. Now it's 8-4. BG gets another one. It's 9-4. You know, they ended, Bedford ended the half with two more goals. It's 9-6 at halftime. They started making some saves that they weren't making earlier. Ethan Kahn really bounced back from
15 saves
from
on the
a
day.
Tough start. Yeah. They changed up what they were doing on the faceoffs. You know, we talked about Dylan Riccio, the great start that he's had to his freshman year on faceoffs, but going against Paulo Vasquez, who I think is regarded by most as the best faceoff guy in the state.
Tough task, like, whether you're a freshman or a senior, to go up against Paulo. Like,
absolutely. You know, so Bedford started mixing up. They started rotating their poles on the faceoffs and just kind of mucking things up. Had some success there. Paulo countered, was able to you know, get back to winning them, including the ones in overtime, which, you know, are huge to set up BG. I guess I just kind of spoiled the ending there. If anybody hadn't been up on date to date, what had happened, you know, they get it to 9-8 in the third quarter, tied it to 10-10. BG's up 11-10 going into the fourth, and I don't know. This is maybe a concerning trend for them. I didn't think of this until later last night. Now the third game in a row where they feel like they've struggled in the third quarter. You know, St. John's, they go scoreless, lose 10-7. Saturday against Staples, they'd been up for most of that game. Staples takes the lead late in the third. BG scores one goal at the end of regulation, but it lose 9-8. This game, they're up 11-10 going into the fourth. They score one goal. Bedford comes back and ties at 12-12 to force overtime. Those fourth quarters, I think, have got to be concerning if you're Coach Cameron.
Third quarters or fourth?
Fourth quarters.
Fourth quarters, yeah. I think part of it is, too, and, you know, they are still an extremely talented program, right? They have a lot of guys from top to bottom that can there, but I don't think too many people would argue that it you know, in terms of what normal depth is for BG, I think it's a little bit less this year. And is it because, you know, you're playing really, really top level teams, high end athletes that are making you work for every goal you're having to play. Maybe you're not getting your defensive middies on as much. Maybe, you know, you've got guys running hard for longer periods of time to score those goals. You go on a run like that, and did it zap a lot of the energy from those guys, and then all of a sudden they let down for a second and the other team capitalizes on that, right? And it takes time to get that momentum back. Whereas, you know, in years past, you're rolling out 1, 2, 3, 4 lines of midfield, right? That have great depth like that, and that was, you know, a staple of BG, is they were just going to wear you down, right? And so, you know, is that something they're working through early season, is how to manage that, right? They still want to play fast, they still want to get out there, but how do you maintain that for 48 minutes, right, and be able to give that same effort all game long? I don't necessarily know that's true, but, like, that's just a hunch that I have, that maybe they're working through, you know, early season, okay, we're not able to play as many guys as we have in the past. How do we work an offense and a defense around that?
Yeah, definitely still things to work out. You know, just the other thing that's a little bit different too is that they're a lot younger in some spots,
yes,
than they normally are. You know, so that's something that comes into play as well.
One place they aren't, though, is with Will Murphy in net. And, you know, watching early in the game there, he made some really key saves. I mean, you know, they've got him with 10 saves in the game, but he made some really big stops that, you know, could have allowed Bedford to go on a huge run. So having him back there backstopping and sort of settling things down and calming things down a little bit is a huge advantage that, again, is going to, you know, with Paulo in the faceoff circle and him back there, that's going to make things, you know, they'll be able to work through some of those things. But I also, you know, again, want to give a lot of credit to Bedford for the way they played yesterday. You know, Brody Helton and Bennett, you know, two guys that we would expect to step up. You know, two goals and three assists. Derek Kaliza, Luke Purnell. Anybody else? I mean, really stand. I mean, it, impressive that those guys were able to step up and when the lights were brightest, shine like that.
You know, I thought defensively they were just as, you know, some of those guys on defense. You know, that was, I think, one thing we talked about last week was, you know, we saw St. John's able to take out, you know, Caleb Young, Brady Dumont for stretches in that game. And we want, you know, and I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast, but I know we talked, you know, is anybody in the state going to be able to do that? you know, that's the big difference is yeah, it's it, those good teams out of state have a guy that can maybe shut one of those guys down for a little while. I think Bedford for stretches was able to do something similar. You know, Spencer Hendershon, Kevin Sheridan, Tristan Kerr, and Brian Riccio.
I was
all
really impressed
great games.
With the way that they were able to press out and really challenge BG. Yeah, it didn't look like that was going to work early on. I mean, the first goal of the game, what, 45
was,
seconds?
Yeah,
into
it was
the
right
game,
off the right off
ran
the face
right
off,
by
boom,
and ran
by
right
everybody.
By, but then
yeah.
You know, they settled down and they still maintained. Look, this is who we want to be, right? We're going to come out. We're going to be in your face. We're going to press you and make you earn it, right? And when you have to play that style of offense, when you can't move the ball around, you know, as easily, and you got to just beat your guy one-on-one, right? They're challenging you. It can blow up in your face as a defense, or it can, you know, it can really throw off an offense.
Sorry, I've been trying to also, while we talk, also search for, I know I have it somewhere where, what, the list of, you know, what past BG losses to in-state teams were. And I'm having a hard time remembering what year I might've wrote that, but anyway, you know,
but they found a way. But in the end, they did find a way. They did find a way to win that game when momentum was definitely not
sure,
on their side.
Sure, and after too, that I thought Bedford had a. I can't remember the exact situation off the top of my head, but Bedford had a great chance at the end of the first overtime. I feel like to put the game away.
I think it was a wide open on the crease behind BTB kind of missed. You know.
But that, and I think there was another shot. I can't remember if it was Helton or Matthews that had it. You know, coming across, trying to get the far corner, and just missing it by maybe a lot more than I'm picturing in my head. But it seemed like it was close from the angle that I was looking at it. But I mean, just, you know, it's been a while. I feel like since we've had kind of a game like that. I mean, the crowd was electric most of the night. Nowhere near what it was the first time they ever played back in 2015. I mean, that was that was a football crowd on a Thursday afternoon. But it was a great crowd, great atmosphere. You know, both teams were into it. It was intense. I don't want to say it ever got chippy, but there was definitely some back and forth.
Sure. They all know each other. You know, and it definitely, to me, it felt like an old BG Pinkerton regular
season
playoff game.
It did have that feel to it.
We've kind of missed for the last few years, you know.
Also, bringing that up, you know, we talked about when was the last time that you know, obviously BG lost to Pinkerton in that 2019 championship game. That year they also played a one-goal game in the regular season. BG won that 12-11. But that was another one. I went back and I did find. BG was up 8-1 midway through the second quarter in that game against Pinkerton. And Pinkerton came back and made it a 12-11 game before BG ultimately won that one. So just not to say that there's any, you know, it's a precursor of anything. Just that's what happened in 2019. You know, and it doesn't end for BG this week either, because they got to go to Exeter on Friday.
And, you know, the cool part is now you get the chess match, right? They've seen each other. They both took each other's best hits, right? And now you really hope that, like, there's a round two in the playoffs, right? Because you want to see what adjustments can the coaches make. How are they going to, you know, they know, okay, these things went well, these things didn't go well. And then just to kind of see what they would do differently when they see each other again. You know, really exciting. Obviously, that game on Friday is going to be great, too. I mean, Exeter already with a win over Lincoln Sudbury. Rolling right now. We'll see what they do against Portsmouth today. Regardless of that outcome, I think it's going to be a great game on Friday.
Yeah, Lincoln Sudbury, Chelmsford, and Melrose. They've got wins over some out-of-state teams. The last two, maybe not quite the level of Lincoln Sudbury, but still, those are games that you got to get up for.
You probably don't have a great scouting report. You don't see them on a regular basis. Great wins.
And a win over Pinkerton last week, too.
Yep.
So Exeter's very well deserved of that number two spot in the poll for sure. And I'm really excited to see what happens with them over the next couple of days. I'm a lot of other D1 stuff to go over, but I feel like anything that stood out to you, we can go over real quick before we move on to D2.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've been talking about that. Who's that number 10 team, right? You had Merrimack playing Concord yesterday. A lot of people, you know, we said Concord is a young team this year. They're beat up a little bit. They played Merrimack to an 8-7 game yesterday, right? And they've and it's not the first, like, Concord has, you know, they are going to get better and better. They've dropped
9-8 and 10-9 last Friday. I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't know why I just said 8-7.
You know, really, really close games. You know, it's a young team that's getting better and better. But, you know, and again, Merrimack off to an impressive start at 3-1 right now.
Concord's got an interesting game against St. Thomas. That's another Wednesday afternoon game. So we'll know more by when everyone hears this. But I'm really interested to see how that goes. And then, you know, some games that, you know, Londonderry and Dover coming up after that. They've already got a win over Dover this season. So,
you know, last week, you know, and then rounded out, you know, Nashville North gets a win over the Manchester Kings. I don't think we talked last week. Manchester Kings, they got a win over, I'm trying to remember last week.
It was
week.
North. They played each other.
They
got an overtime
they've now
win.
Now split the series.
And then they also beat South on Monday. So 2-1 in their Nashua tour. All actually, 2-2. They do have the loss to BG on there, too. And another game against South coming up later in the year. Yeah, but they're right, you know, the way the standings are right now, they're 2-3. They're right in the thick of things outside of the top, you know, couple teams in the division. All right, yeah, D2, two undefeated teams left, 6-0. Kind of no surprise, I think. You know, Derryfield, Portsmouth, familiar
we've got
faces.
We've got, you know, Portsmouth entering into their stretch, you know, heavy stretch. We're entering into our heavy stretch. We've got Westwood this weekend. We've got Timberlane and Portsmouth coming up following that. Before then, we've got Goffstown on the schedule. We've got Merrimack Valley, who's playing well there. So we're entering into a tougher part of our schedule. Portsmouth is definitely ramping up their schedule. So, you know, we'll kind of see how that shakes out. And then in terms of, you know, other teams there, you know, a huge playoff implicate. We had Wyndham and Winnicunnet playing yesterday.
Yeah, with Wyndham getting a big road win there, 11-9 at Winnicunnet. You know, they've certainly bounced back well from that that one goal loss in the first week to Oyster River, in a game that they were down big, or you know, big relative to the final score, and had to come back in the fourth quarter in that one to get it to a one goal game. So, you know, they seem to have turned some things around. Wednesday was playing Nashua South, so that's the potential to get that all-important
extra point,
which they already have won from beating Salem earlier this year, too. And then they've got a you know, game at Alvern coming back from vacation, which, you know, Alvern's
really playing well right now.
Really, got into a battle with Hollis Brookline yesterday, which Hollis ended up winning 12-10. In that one.
But Alvern proving not to be an easy out for anyone. You know, similar start they had last year too. But I think even more sustained than they were last year. They're really giving teams everything they can handle each time they go out there. You know, in terms of Wyndham, like, I think that, you know, dropping that game early sometimes that can be a good thing for you. You haven't been out. I mean, you never want to lose, but like, you know, they don't have a turf field. You don't know how much time that they had early season out there playing on a full field. You know, and you like to see that they're making adjustments and they're getting better and better each game.
They at least get to play on the soccer field over there at Wyndham, as opposed the girls are on the football field, and the football field is, I was over there last week and it held up pretty well in the rain last week. But if there's a lot of back-to-back days of rain or no sun and it's used a lot, that field gets, it's horrendous.
You gotta be careful with that. You're going to get their AD in trouble right there.
I don't know. I don't think that's a very well kept secret around the state. You know, doesn't feel like it. You know, it's they have a tough track to play on over there. Another field that had, you know, I've joked about in the past, more so because of the animal droppings that are on it that have delayed the start times. And I don't know how I can never not bring that up. Sorry. But I went over to Timberlane on Monday for their game against Oyster River Newmarket, and I came away just really impressed with what Timberlane has been doing. The way obviously they had that loss to Portsmouth last week, you know, turn it around with a 16-3 win over Hollis Brookline, and then a 17-8 win against Oyster River Newmarket on Monday. But just they exploded out of the start in that game. I couldn't tell, and I should have asked Coach Blaska this pregame. One of their guys got in the middle of the huddle and just was like, screaming and yelling at every, like, just getting everybody fired up. And it was, you know, obviously loud enough that I could hear it. And it was, I feel like a relatively clean and, you know, appropriate speech, if I'm remembering it correctly. And I forgot to ask him who it was, but it really, like, it was kind of quiet and game was getting ready to start. And all of a sudden that, and they came out roaring. Four goals in the first, I think, 2.5 minutes to start the game. 7-2 at the end of one. They kind of go into a little bit of a lull in the second quarter, which something that Coach Blaska called piggy ball, where they're all, you know, basically ball hogging, playing hero ball. Bounce back, though, in the second half. Four goals in another 2.5 minutes to start the second half and get it into running time for what, the last, you know, almost two quarters.
They're a dangerous team. They are explosive in the offensive end. We know they play good, tough, hard-nosed defense. They're going to be, you know, similar to Coach Blaska's personality. They're coming after you, right? They're going to be in your face. They're going to press out. They're going to go after you and not give you an inch. And you turn the ball over, they're going to take advantage of it. And you let their shooters get their hands free. You're in for a long day. They're capable of putting up big points on anybody.
He did say something to me at the end of our interview there that I don't know how this isn't on a T-shirt yet. He called it the Timberlane way: yell, scream, and have a good time.
That does sound like a T-shirt right there.
Yeah.
Yell, scream, have a good time. Boom.
Exactly. You know, they actually, no, they're probably not quite done yet as we're recording this, but they were at Sauhegan Wednesday morning and then come back, you know, with a big following week at St. Thomas and at Hanover. With that, you know, at Hanover, I mean, it's a drive,
it's a drive from
where they are. So you never know how you get off the bus in that one. And then, like you said, the big one coming up afterwards, you guys, Derryfield gets to go to Timberlane.
We were talking earlier. He's got a lot of smart kids on that team. We're talking about I believe it's SA, AP testing day, so we may have to move.
Oh, really?
We may have to move some time. The, you know, Derryfield kids, we don't do that here. We're not smart enough for that. So
I do not believe that we're gonna make that work for
coach over there.
I don't believe that one bit. I don't know, any other thoughts on D2 before we move on to D3 for the week?
I you know, D2's kind of playing out with a lot of close games, a lot of you know, I think early season here we're kind of just seeing teams get used to being on a full field and you know, and then vacation week, always interesting, right? You never know who's got a full roster, who's missing guys, but the next couple of weeks should be fun. Some great matchups coming up. And you know, we had some vacation week, had some surprises in D3 for us as well.
Hold that thought for a second. I do want to mention D2. We've seen that how it's playing out. Five teams with one loss, four or five teams with two in D2. And then another five teams with three.
You're not going to be able to tell. You're not going to be able to guess seedings until the final week. It was very similar to that last year with the teams that are also playing D1 teams and the points that are involved in different things. It's not going to matter. You're going to have to play. You want to get to the championship, you're going to play three good games at least, you know. And so, you know, I think trying to figure out who you're going to play, it's going to be impossible until the last week there.
Well, yeah, D3 took a kind of a twist and a turn on Tuesday, where you had Cole Brown going to Campbell, and after what was kind of a, you know, gritty, grindy kind of game early, Cole Brown just, you know, all of a sudden pulls away for a 12-6 win over Campbell in that one. Cougars were missing some guys.
And Coach DePalma definitely, and, you know, when I texted, I congratulated him after the game. He fully said, you know, look, we understand Campbell was missing some guys, but still a huge win for our program, huge confidence booster, and a huge win in terms of playoff standings.
Absolutely, yeah. And I know we talked at the beginning of the year that we thought there could be as many as five teams that are, you know, vying for that championship, you know, reasonably, you know, there could be two or three more beyond that. The teams that end up, you know, 8, 9, 10 and having to play in that first round game, I mean, there could be someone in that group that we thought, you know, was championship caliber just because of the meat grinder that's going to be this schedule.
Unbalanced
here.
Schedules, losses, yeah, you never know. So again, another division that probably you're not going to have an easy first round game.
No. You know, you look at it and you know, Cole Brown and Campbell play again on the third at Cole Brown. You know, I was talking to Coach Knight after the game, talking about what he was trying to do to, you know, give them a little bit, some tougher games in their schedule. Certainly, you know, as much as they want to win every game, he wasn't too upset about the adversity that a loss, you know, gives you at this point in the year. You know, they come back and have to play Plymouth right out of the chute after vacation. They also play at Alvern, Pelham, Laconia. Oh, this is their stretch here.
Right.
At Alvern, home to Pelham, at Laconia, at Bow. Then they turn around the following Monday, the last Monday of the season, and go to Central Catholic, who just beat Londonderry last week. Which, you know, a game that he said he wanted to get on the schedule late in the year to kind of give them one more test going into the playoffs.
Yeah. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. I definitely think it's gonna pay dividends for them come playoff time there, regardless of what seat. You know, we've already talked. There's multiple teams in that division that could win the title. So, you know, could there be an easier seat if you get a one or two? Maybe, but like you're gonna have to. You just don't want to lose your last game, right? I mean, I know that's super cliche and like right, but like Campbell has done that. They've had, you know, great regular seasons. They've gone to the playoffs. Their goal is, we're getting over the top. We're not losing our last game this year, and we don't care how many games, you know, whatever. Let's challenge ourselves during the regular season and prepare for that stretch.
I will say with Cole Brown, I was really impressed with them defensively. You know, they got out on Campbell and got after them, made it uncomfortable at times, you know, for Campbell to kind of settle into its offense, which then led to them, you know, rushing shots at times, turning the ball over. And then, you know, the big part of that was Jack Mattson in goal. 11 saves. Felt like he had, you know, 10 more because he was just making plays out there. A couple times on bat, you know, he'd make a save. Campbell would get the ground ball, and then he'd make another save. He played really well, I thought. And then they were just opportunistic. You know, they had opportunities. You know, sometimes it looked like maybe they should slow things down in transition, but they kept going. You know, Sam Fry had a big game for them, 4 goals. That's the other thing too, is it was spread out fairly evenly, for them offensively. A couple really nice goals. I forget exactly who had them, where they kind of used the defender as the screen and just, you know, whipped a shot around him.
And when you have that kind of balanced scoring, it makes it really, you know, that's great to hear for Coach LaPalma, because it makes your team a lot more difficult to scout and shut down when you're not relying on one or two guys. So, you know, again, great win for them. Unfortunately, not a whole lot of other games. I do want to mention, we were not implying in the last broadcast that coaches did not want to play over spring break. More of an AD problem that, you know, just looking through the schedule here, really the only game in Division III until Monday the 29th when we get back. A lot of games on Monday the 29th coming back in Division III.
Yeah, I feel like there were at least, you know, Monday, Tuesday of this past week, there were a couple of games. Obviously, Campbell had games Monday and Tuesday.
Right.
Maybe we'll just, in the future, we'll just not really even mention vacation week at all, maybe. That might be safest for us. You know, there is one other D3 game I wanted to talk about that I did get to see last week. That was the Plymouth-Pelham game. You know, a very interesting matchup to me because, you know, Pelham's a very senior-heavy team. Plymouth is not. Just 2 seniors on that team. You know, but we know that they're traditionally have been, you know, a very strong program, and whether they've got, you know, the horses or not, you know, they're in the mix. But Pelham, I came away very impressed with them, you know, specifically on the offensive end and their ability to possess the ball.
Yeah.
You know, the big thing that got me was they were hanging on to a couple goal lead for most of that game. You know, Plymouth is doing everything it can to get back in it, and they're not letting Pelham run away with it until that fourth quarter. Pelham wins the first faceoff and had a like 3.5 minute possession before scoring. Win the next faceoff, keep the ball again, and they kept doing it. They won every faceoff in the fourth quarter. Matthew Sprague has been huge for them in terms of just being able to hang on to the ball, and then having those seniors that understand
being disciplined
exactly.
You know, not just take a shot, make sure it's a good one, a high quality one that you're likely going to score on. Especially in a game like that, you don't want to give up easy goals going the other way. And sometimes possession is your best defense.
And if there was ever a want for more like a crossover type of games, I would love to see Pelham and Memphis Patterson go against some of these D1 defenses and see how some of those teams would handle him.
Sure.
Because he looks unstoppable at times.
Yeah. I mean, again, we talked about them early season. You know, they are a team that if they stay healthy, there aren't going to be too many teams in D3 that are going to want to see them come playoff time there. They're not particularly deep, but the skill players they have, the 10 guys they can roll out there are pretty darn good.
Absolutely. All right. Any final thoughts before we wrap up for the week?
Just wish the Exeter Portsmouth game wasn't at 3:00. it's been a great week, and excited to see the results tonight from the different teams that are playing on Wednesday here.
Yeah, and I should mention too, since we are coming up on the halfway point of the season, we'll be starting the playoff picture posts probably on Monday. I know it feels early, especially.
God bless you.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking Monday. I'm, you know, it's one of those that's you're caught in a tough spot because I feel like if I wait till the end of the week, it's already getting kind of late. But Monday also does feel too early. But somewhere, let's put it that way. Sometime next week, I will have
sounds a good. More to look forward to.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that'll wrap us up for this week. Chris, thanks so much for doing this.
Absolutely.
He's Chris Hettler. I'm Joe Marcellina. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.